Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic book sales through Diamond to retailers for November 2009. And yes, we are releasing this on a Monday instead of our regularly scheduled weekly comic spotlight, and that's because of the holidays. When do you think you'll get your shipment, Bob?
Well, my shipment that was sent on December 23rd, the UPS website is currently showing that I should get it on January 4th.
Wow.
And that's if they don't reschedule it again.
Yeah, that's if they can find it to ship it or whatever. That's just crazy.
Yeah, it sat in the warehouse in Illinois apparently from December 23rd until December 28th, according to the tracking data on their website. So I'm guessing that it just fell behind a pallet of something and got lost for a week, because normally something doesn't sit in a warehouse for a week waiting to get shipped on. I mean, I've had things sit around at my local place waiting for them to be able to fit it on a truck to deliver it to me, but yeah, that's not happened before, so I'm hoping it's an anomaly.
My shipment was stuck, I think, in that same warehouse in Illinois, whatever, the Hodgkin's one or whatever it is.
Yeah.
From like the 24th to the 28th, and it may just be that that's one of their main spots, and it just gotten to be a huge bottleneck. But even so, that's ridiculous. I'm starting to wonder if your shipment after that, for the item or two that came out on the 30th, is going to arrive pretty much at the same time.
Well, that one is they're estimating that one to be delivered on the 7th.
Oh, so a few days later. That's just, yeah. It's one of the few downsides of doing comics mail order.
Yep.
But hey, the discount I get through DCBS at least is certainly worth it, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the first time we've actually had to delay an episode because of UPS delivery issues. But I just didn't want to buy like three duplicates of three comics to do the episode on time. So
no, that's fine. Like you said, it's the first time we've had to delay it due to shipping issues, and only the second time we've had to delay the weekly comic spotlight out of 124 weeks. The other time we delayed it by a day because I was in Japan for a week and a half.
Yeah.
So I think we're doing pretty good on hitting that on time stuff. And again, we've got a Monday episode. We'll have the weekly spotlight up on Wednesday. And probably quite a few episodes in January, just as we get the year-end stuff and all those things starting to get rolling. So let's start talking about these numbers. It's kind of interesting this time around, because if you look at the breakdown of the top 300 comics, again, this is through Diamond to retailers. So we're not looking at, you know, mass market outlets or any of that stuff. So same numbers as usual. And also, as usual, Marvel is up on top. They've got 44.83% of the total units for the top 300 and 45.81% of the total dollars for those units. DC came in second place. Again, this is kind of standard fare. They had 36.68% of the units and 36.28% of the dollars. Now, what's interesting is while this kind of a breakdown, Marvel on top, DC not too far behind in second place is fairly common, it's rather ironic given that DC had, you know, seven of the top 10 items. And the top selling Marvel book was under 100,000. So DC is doing very well. They're up at the top of the list in a lot of cases. But it comes down to the fact that Marvel came out with 98 total items, 5 were reordered, but 93 were new, while DC only came out with 82 items, 3 of which were reordered, so 79 new ones. So that extra,
and that makes a big difference. You put out more product, even if it's not selling you know, gangbusters, it still gives you that edge up. It's like getting a head start in a foot race or something.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and this is one of those cases where I think things like the thrice monthly Spider-Man, the plethora of Avenger titles and things like that, and the way Marvel has been expanding some of their franchises has really paid off. You know, it's just kind of funny, though, because DC this month in particular did so well with Blackest Night and its crossovers and tie-ins and stuff, for them still not to come out on top, you know, it's kind of funny, it's kind of unfortunate, whatever. It's good for DC to be doing so well on the comic side, it's good for Marvel to have such good overall sales, but I find it kind of interesting.
But, I mean, for the product that they're putting out, I mean, they're doing pretty well. You know, DC is, you know, they're getting overtaken on sheer volume, and that's not the first time Marvel did that. You know, who's really suffers from that kind of stuff are the other publishers. Reminds me of back in the early days of the direct market, you know, when Marvel was, like, churning out all those reprint titles.
Yeah.
Just to, like, gobble up retailer dollars. Because, I mean, retailers know that Marvel books sell. You know, most people who come in, and DC books too, but, I mean, most people who come in to buy comics, they buy Marvel and DC comics, and there's only so many dollars to go around. So if Marvel and DC gobble up the retailer dollar with lots of product, that's less money that those retailers have to buy independent stuff.
Well, and this month we had only 120 of the top 300 items were new items by publishers that were not Marvel and DC. So I'm even including Dark Horse and Image in this. Mm-hmm. And that equates to, you know, about a little over 41% of the list or whatever. But that only counted for about 18.5% of the units for the top 300. Now, you've got a lot of publishers that have, you know, an item that hits the top 300. But, you know, even Dark Horse only had 21 items, Image only had 18, Boom Studios had 18. They're again, kind of a growing publisher these days. But, you know, the largest, you know, percentage of sales from the top 300 once you get past Marvel and DC was Dark Horse with just under 4.8%, with 4.79 by units. So, I mean, there's just a huge difference between those two top dogs and everybody else. So, which is too bad, because I think a lot of some of these independent publishers or smaller publishers are coming out with just some great stuff, but it's harder for them to get that market penetration because it's a very tough market right now. And I think that goes towards Marvel and DC, both, you know, coming out with a lot of stuff, but also coming out with a lot of good stuff. So, now, topping the list, as is no surprise, because it's topped the list every month it's been out, is Blackest Night number 5. It did 144,887 estimated units. That's a 5.72% gain over the previous issue. And part of why it had that gain is it had that green power ring shipped with it. Now, this is the month where we had 7 of the 8 different power rings. The black one, of course, had shipped with Blackest Night number 1 way back when. But the yellow ring came out on the 4th of November with Doom Patrol 4. The orange ring came out the following week with Booster Gold 26, which is the same week the Indigo ring shipped with Rebels number 10. On the week of the 18th, the blue ring shipped with Adventure Comics number 4, the violet ring with Outsiders number 24, and then the last week of the month, the 25th, the red ring shipped here with Blackest Night number 5, or the green ring, and the red ring with Justice League of America number 39. And what we've seen on every one of these issues is a huge uptick in sales. Now, the 5 and roughly 3/4% on Blackest Night number 5 was really the least of the gains to be had. The biggest one by far was on Rebels number 10, which jumped up 39,808 units, which, I mean, is just a insane increase of, you know, 353%. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, part of that is the ring itself. Part of that is the Blackest Night crossover. So I think we'll see a bit of a gain over, say, Rebels number 9 when we see 11. And then when it gets down to 12, which will be the first non-Blackest Night crossover, it'll be interesting to see if there's any carryover at all with these crossovers and this Power Ring sales gimmick.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we were talking about that before, you know, when we talked about Rebels. You know, it's just I'm going to be seriously curious on the carry through, especially some of these books that are good books. I mean, I read some of these books, and it's like Outsiders. Outsiders is an okay book, you know, but it doesn't blow my doors off when I read it.
Yeah.
Rebels is an outstanding book, you know, so if that one doesn't retain sales, as we said before, I just don't know what would help sales on a book.
Well, I agree that, you know, Rebels is the one that I think is going to be kind of the test case of, does this, you know, methodology for you know, doing a crossover, does it really boost sales and get new readers on the book or not? Because while I think almost all the crossovers for the Blackest Night stuff, both the ones with the Power Rings and the one without, almost all of them have been very well done. Yeah, I really question, given how many events we've had over the last couple of years and, you know, how tight of a market it is, you know, if this can be effective at all or not, and I'm leaning towards probably not.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be surprised if, Rebels 12 sells better than number 9 did, or
yeah,
if it did by any noticeable margin. And even if it does, I think by the time we hit issue 13 or 14, that bump will be gone. And it comes down to, was this Power Ring sales gimmick a success or not? Really, that depends, what were they trying to achieve? You know, if they were trying to boost sales, well, when you take a book that had been selling 11,257 units and spike its sales up to 51,083 estimated units for an issue, you sold more books. You know, you can't call it a failure on that grounds. But should that really have been the goal or not?
Well, I mean, that's to some extent not a bad goal, because the Power Rings that they shipped, you know, while those, for the most part, I mean, some retailers were really selling those for a pile of money to make a profit on them. But, you know, a lot of the retailers were actually giving them away if you bought the book. But they weren't free to the retailers.
No.
The retailers had to pay some, what was the amount that they paid per bag, John?
They paid $8 per bag, and they could only qualify for bags under certain conditions. They had to order either 25 or 50 of each of the different titles. And for each threshold they ordered, they could, in most cases, buy two bags, with the exception, I think, possibly of Blackest Night number 5, where they could only order one bag.
Mm-hmm.
But that allowed them to order, and then they had to go pay the $8 a bag to do it.
Yeah, and I think my point, though, is that I think that $8 covered the cost of making those for DC. So DC was not out any money on the rings. You know, they were at least breaking even on the rings, I think. And, you know, so if they can increase their sales by a wide margin, which it appears that they did for those books that those rings came out, and they broke even on the ring, you know, they made extra money. And that's, you know, the name of the game for a business. You know, they brought that extra money to their bottom line. Now, could they have done more? Sure, maybe.
But let's talk about that for a minute in terms of across these 7 titles, did they increase sales? I mean, the answer is obviously yes. The question then is by how much? Now, if you look just at the delta between how these issues sold and the previous issue of these titles, they boosted sales by over 250,000 units. So, I mean, they made a serious chunk of change here. Probably, I'd estimate, at full retail cost, $1.8 million with this. Now, how much they made on the rings and stuff, presumably that's going to kind of net it out, like you said, to to not lose money. So, I mean, clearly they increased sales. But the question is, and we won't know this for a good couple of months, did they increase readers on these titles or not? And again, how transient are these increase in sales? Where just, you know, people in retail are saying, ooh, I need to order this much to get the rings, and then they're gone? Or what? And certainly, you know, there's nothing wrong with increasing sales. There's nothing wrong with making more money, even on a short-term kind of a cash grab basis. But I would hope that, you know, getting more readers on the title on an ongoing basis is one of their goals, not necessarily of this particular sales gimmick, but just in general.
Well, like I said, I'm sure that that's a goal. Whether they will realize that goal or not, that will remain to be seen. But at a minimum, they at least made the money, you know, on those issues. So from a business bottom line, it's not a complete loss no matter what happens.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You couldn't consider this a failure in any way, shape, or form, at least none that I've thought of. I would also say as a marketing stunt goes, this was a huge success. Regardless of how, you know, it impacts the sales of the titles ongoing, people were looking for these rings. People were excited about these rings. People have been talking about these rings. It was a good marketing stunt. You know, and I would say probably the most effective we've seen in ages. I'd be hard-pressed to name another one that I think was of this caliber. You know, to me, it puts the variant cover stuff kind of to shame. Because people talk about that, and then it's, you know, for a bit, and then it's gone, if they even discuss it at all. You know, so I think DC's kind of raised the bar on how to market comics, and it'll be interesting to see if they can do something of this caliber, you know, again. Now, going through the various Blackest Night titles real quick, Doom Patrol number 4 was at rank 24, and I'm going to go through these in rainbow order, so starting with the yellow ring here. It did 53,730 units. That's an increase of 20,019 units, so a jump of 168.4%, so good job there. The orange ring, like I said, was at Booster Gold. That was at rank 19. That sold 57,103 units compared to the previous issue's 21,579, an increase of 164.62%. The Indigo Ring on Rebels, which we were just talking about, again, the 51,083 units, again, comparing that to the 11,275 units for the 353.06% gain. The Blue Ring was on Adventure Comics. That was up at rank number 6 with 85,117 units compared to the previous issue's 44,394 units. That's a gain of 40,723 units, so 91.73% gain. So not quite doubling in sales, but pretty close. And given how this title had been selling before, that's still not bad. The Violet Ring with Outsiders was down at rank 31 at 50,901 units compared to the previous issue's 21,395 units, an increase of 29,506 units, or a 137.91% gain. We already talked about Blackest Night, number 5, having done the 144,887 units. That is a gain of only 7,833 units, or 5.72%, but given it's been at the top of the charts every month it came out, it'd be kind of hard to double those sales. And then finally, the Red Ring, which was with Justice League of America number 39, which placed him rank 5, that did 89,346 units compared to the 60,961 units the previous issue did, for a gain of 28,385 units, or 46.56% gain. So in all cases, sales went up, in some cases by, you know, half what it had been selling, in some cases by multiple times what it had been selling. And in the majority of these cases, such as Justice League, Rebels, Outsiders, it was going from a $299 priced previous issue to a $399 priced promotional issue, and still saw those gains. So, you know, no matter how you look at it, Black as Night has been a huge success for DC, which is why I find it kind of interesting that even with this huge success, Marvel is still outpacing DC in terms of the overall percentage in sales. But, you know, you crank out another dozen or two titles, that helps.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, to some extent, I'm kind of glad that DC didn't just churn out a lot more, you know, books than they did. I mean, they could have, certainly.
Oh, yeah, they've been staggering the different miniseries and stuff. They could have come out with those all at once.
And it maybe goes to the, you know, nice guys finish last in the business world kind of thing, because, you know, I think to some extent they tend to take the high road compared to what Marvel does sometimes on just churning out books seemingly for the purpose of churning out books. And, you know, to that extent, you know, look, it lands them in second place. But you still got to respect them, you know.
Well, and it's interesting, second place in the overall, but we look at the top 10. And
sure, seven of the top 10. Well deserved.
Yeah. And I'd rather
the fans
have,
are reacting.
You know? I'd rather have seven of the top 10 than be getting that top slot in the overall rankings by having, you know, 70 of the bottom 100 or what have you, or, you know, whatever it would work out to be. So DC does tend to take a longer-term view on things than Marvel, and this is one where I think it'll pay off, because I think Blackest Night is going to do fairly well on the trade side, at least as the main series, and hopefully as some of these miniseries and other collected things.
Oh, you know, I think guaranteed. I think that Blackest Night will be almost a perennial seller for them on the trade market. And, you know, taking that aside, they're going to sell hardcover version of that. They're going to sell, you know, soft cover trades of that. And at some point, I'm sure they're going to make an absolute and sell out of a first printing of an absolute on it as well. So, I mean, they'll make some follow-on collected edition revenue on this easily, and I'm sure you'll talk about that when the time becomes right with Chris, when you do the show with Chris.
Yeah. I'm actually wondering if they're going to try to do any kind of a promotional stunt on the trade side like they did with the Power Rings. What I think would be cool for them to do would be power batteries that are sized such that the little outlet that the ring would plug into it fits nicely in or whatever. I mean, something about the size of a film canister or something.
The thing about that would suck is that I had to buy the trades.
I know.
One of those stupid things.
If they did that, I would buy the trades. And I don't normally. But, you know, I mean, to me, that's the kind of thing that if... I think they could get a lot of people to buy the trades that way.
They'd have to be really small, though, just from the shipping, you know. Any decent-sized power battery would be big.
Well, I'm thinking something that's not to scale with the ring, but something that's about the size of a, you know, like, again, a film canister or something, you know, 2 or 3 inches tall, an inch or so around or something. Mm-hmm. It'd be noticeably bigger than the Power Ring, certainly, and they'd have to charge the retailers a bit more for it, or ideally sell it in smaller quantities, since they're unlikely to sell 25 of any trade or whatever in some stores. But that's the sort of thing that, you know, if they could pull off, would be kind of a cool thing to do.
Now, they are going to be selling the set of Power Rings where they're taking it up a notch. And this is something that I think you had mentioned at one point, you know, you would buy something like this if they made it, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And let me pull it up really quick here. I put a link to it in our previews episode thread for the next one on the forum. But they're coming out with a set of power rings that's a full set of the plastic rings, only they're not exact duplicates of the ones that we got with the books, because these that are coming out have little LEDs or something in them that light up. So the rings will actually, each one will light up. And that's from DC Direct. And I've pulled it up here. Let me have a quick look. So it's a Blackest Night Powering Spectrum set. Embody the entire emotional spectrum. It says they instantly light up with a long-lasting LED bulb when slipped on your finger. The light can be turned off manually to preserve the battery, and the battery can be changed. They come in a deluxe window box, and it will be $60 for the set of 8 rings.
That's a hell of a deal.
So I remember you had at one point mentioned, oh, yeah, you know, it'd be really cool if they just made a set of the rings. Well, you know, so here they're making a light-up set of this. They're not just making it because you have a regular set of the rings. So it's like, I think someone said, okay, so how do we get these people to buy the things again? Well, let's make them light up. You know, it's like, okay, that's cool. So that's $60, you know, and, you know, we'll get a discount on that from DCBS. You get it for like, you know, $40 or something like that, or $45.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think the people who ordered that JLA Trophy Room set or whatever are going to be increasingly unamused with DC Direct.
Well, I mean, those are metal, at least, and these are plastic.
True, but...
But these light up.
These light up.
Like,
these
if the metal rings
the
had
cost.
Lit up for, you know, 200 and whatever dollars, not even in the correct spectral order.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I'm glad that they did that, because that caused me to pull that out of my cart, and thus I don't have to worry with the frustration of having blown $200 on that. So
that's cool. I'm gonna have to put that on my order when that comes out.
Yeah, so that's on the online solicit, and again, if anyone goes to the forums, if you just look at the preview spotlight number 27. For January solicits of March deliveries. I've got links to all the online solicits in there. And under the DC solicits, that's down at the bottom in the DC Direct section.
Yeah. Well, as should be no surprise, given how popular Blackest Night is and the fact that they've got crossovers to it, rank number 2 is Green Lantern 48 with 100,338 units. And at rank 7 is Green Lantern Corps number 42 with 80,364 units. Both of these titles lost around 1% in sales, but that's kind of standard attrition these days. And that Green Lantern is the only item other than Blackest Night to do over 100,000 this month. So overall, you know, we're seeing, I mean, because there have been months where we'd have like a dozen things doing over 100,000. So I got to wonder if the increase in price on some books and if just the increase in the number of books is taking its toll on some readers. Now, the top-ranked Marvel book is Captain America Reborn number 4. It did 96,539 units. That's a drop of 10.82% or 11,710 units. And I think part of it there is, while I'm enjoying the thing, I mean, this was 3 weeks late. It's losing a little momentum on the timeliness aspect. Because the previous issues, I guess it started on July 1st, next issue came out on August 5th, then September 16th, and now November 4th. So the spacing of that, I think, is not helping the sales. And
yeah,
it started at 197,420 units for the total known sales of that first issue.
Well, something interesting about that one, too, is that Who Will Wield the Shield came out. And we'll be talking about it on the next episode, right? And,
provided you ever get your books,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, provided I ever get them. But the actual thing I was going to get at here is 6 isn't out yet. So I'm like, well, wait a minute. Is this Who Will Wield the Shield supposed to come between issues 5 and 6? And I think no. I think it's supposed to come after number 6.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think they've had to kind of get that out because there have already been one or two other things that have referenced presumably what the events are going to be in that issue.
Yeah, well, that New Avengers Annual certainly had it. And it's just, you know, especially when things rely on other things, you know, to have these kind of delays is pretty inexcusable when you're putting out books. You know, they did the same thing with those specials that came out with the list.
Yeah.
You know?
If it's supposed to be read after this other book, come out after that other book. And it's not as bad as when DC was doing some of the 52 stuff, and it's like, this takes place, you know, or no, it was Countdown. It was Countdown, where things took place, you know, 6 months back or whatever, and the timeline was just totally confused. It frustrates me when they do that. Yeah, I like to read my books in kind of the order they're published in, figuring I'm reading them when they're publishing them, in theory.
Right.
So, rank number 4, we had Batman and Robin number 6. That continues to do very well for DC with 95,658 units. That's a drop of a little over 5.75%, but still very strong sales for that book. Now, we've already talked about most of the other in the top 10, taking us down to rank number 8 with New Avengers. And I find this kind of interesting. We got issue 59 here. It sold 74,354 units. It's a drop of a little under 3%, but that puts the title below 75,000, and it's the highest rank Avenger title. So the allure or whatever is starting to wear off on some of those titles, because that used to be consistently one of the top books over at Marvel, and doing closer to, if not above, 100,000, and now it's dipped well below that.
Right.
Now, rank number 9, huge.
I'm wondering if it's the fact that it's a standard length comic that they jacked the price up to $3.99 on, if some of the luster is wearing off on it because of that.
Quite possibly. I think part of it's that, and you've also got the whole, you know, Dark Reign that's been going on forever and ever. It feels like Marvel's been in a little bit of a holding pattern, and I think they kind of botched the Dark Reign stuff because it wasn't really an event, but it sure lasted forever and a day. And, you know, what I'm hearing about Siege is people are looking forward to it, not so much because of anything about it, just so much as Dark Reign's finally coming to an end. So I think that has really... I think that's what's part of what's come into play with the Avengers stuff, in addition to the price. Is not only are you not getting the page for the dollar, you're not getting the story progression. But that's their top franchise at the moment, and, you know, both New Avengers and Dark Avengers, well below 75,000. So, now at rank number 9, we've got Flash Rebirth number 5, that did 73,850 units. It's down about 5.35%. from the previous issue, and I think what really killed this is for the Fastest Man Alive, for this book to be shipping 12 weeks late, that's pretty bad.
It is ironic. Hadn't thought of that.
And I get Barry Allen's always late. I mean, I kind of get that. I'm an old-school Flash fan. I'm frustrated by it in so much as, because it was 12 weeks late, damn it.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing some good stuff here. And again, Geoff Johns... most valuable writer at DC these days by far, I think. They've got some other great writers, but, you know, between what he's doing with Flash, what he's doing with the Blackest Night stuff, I don't know what was the cause of the delays, but, you know, they got to get that last issue out, and we'll see what happens when the Flash goes to a monthly book, or at least tries to go to a monthly book. Let's see. Again, Dark Avengers rounds out the top 10 with number 11 doing 72,201 estimated units, drop of 4.44%. Again, sales attrition is kind of par for the course. So that's part of why I'm looking to see if all these readers who picked up some of these books for the Power Rings, if any of them stick around. Because that would, you know, potentially prove that, hey, these crossovers can work and boost sales. But that just seems to be an unrealistic expectation.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of other Blackest Night crossovers without the Power Rings. We had Superman Batman number 66, which did 52,126 units. That's an increase of 50.85%. So... you know, it raised it by half of how it had been selling again, you know. So from 34,556 up by the 17,570, that's pretty good. Particularly given I thought it was a weak crossover, tangential at best.
You know, the trick with any crossover is that generally you're not reading it there in the store. Many people, you know, they buy them roughly when they come out. You know, they're not, you know, hearing some review or whatever of it. And a lot of times that's not going to make a difference anyway. You know, it's just the fact that it is a crossover. That's what sells it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know till they get home and they read it whether or not it was somewhat less than it could have been.
Well, not only that, but I don't think that the contents of issue 66 are going to really impact 67, which is a continuation of the story. You know, it's not just that you don't read it in the store. It's kind of, in some cases, the store's already ordered them. In some cases, the reader has them on their pull list. They're going to write out a bad story arc or whatever.
True.
So it's... That's one of the things that makes kind of predicting sales on the comic side so hard, is there's so many variables, and the question is, how quickly does some of this go from people seeing the item to, you know, the sales dropping or increasing because of that? I mean, a good case in point is going to be what's at rank 42, and that's Image United number 1. We got the first issue here at 42,852 units, and there were some definite questions I think people would have had on, you know, how is this art going to work with the every artist touching every page, sort of, or every page of their characters on, I should say. You know, how's that going to work out? Can they get it out on a timely basis? Is the story going to be any good? And I'm thinking that we're going to see potentially a noticeable drop on that second issue. Certainly by the time that final issue comes out, the verdict will be in on you know, how the audience kind of reacted to that in general.
I have not heard, I mean, granted, I have not gone every place to look for any feedback or anything, but the people I do know, including yourself, who have read that thing, I have not heard rousing reviews of it.
Well, I read the second issue, and my review is much less rousing than it would have been before, you know?
It wasn't rousing in the first place.
No.
It's like, I skipped it, and like the general thing I've been hearing from people when I say, hey, you know, did you like that? You know, should I check it out? It's like, nah, you don't really need to bother. That's basically what I've been hearing.
I really am looking forward to seeing how that sixth issue does, because I think this is going to be a potentially, and, you know, who knows how the sales are going to do, but potentially a case study in, I almost want to say, an event gone wrong, because they haven't really hyped it up as an event, but artistically it certainly is, with that many people involved, with the number of characters involved. The writing I've found to be, I'm just going to go with atrocious as far as I'm concerned. It's all fight scenes and too little substance for my tastes, but maybe it'll, you know, catch the imagination of, you know, Image fans everywhere, and I'm the odd man out, although I kind of doubt that's going to be the case. But I can easily see where by that sixth issue, we're going to see it much, much further down on the list. So, because I do think there are cases where, you know, people have certain expectations of a book, but then they actually see the book, and it's like, oh, well, that's not what I thought it was going to be. Rank 60 with Web of Spider-Man number 2, I think, illustrates this point. First issue did 58,363 units, which is not bad. It's a little less than the Amazing Spider-Man titles had been doing. But this issue dropped by over 45% to 32,082 units. And that's a really, really harsh drop for a second issue. It's about twice the average, if not more. And it's one of those things that I think people were expecting it to have a bit more Spider-Man in it, a bit less of, you know, Spider-Girl or some of these other characters or what have you. And it wasn't what people had expected. I think we saw some of that on the Marvel project and Torch, which I thought initially seemed to be getting decent buzz, but then they came out and, I mean, Torch is down at rank 135 with the third issue, and it's selling 15,204 units. And that was one that I had expected to do noticeably better than that. Easily, I would have expected twice the units on that. But we've seen a lot of harsh drops on second issue, also over at DC with the new Azrael series at rank 98, already down at 21,385 units. That's down 39.39% from the first issue. So that's one that I don't see necessarily sticking around to a second year.
Yeah, I'm kind of I'm finding that one already. You know, issues in the dollar bins. You know, I got the first issue and stopped reading. It's a bad sign when you got a book that's what issue's on the stands right now of that?
Three.
And I'm already finding issue two in the dollar bin. You know, it's like, okay, that's...
Well, from a retailer's perspective...
How bad does a retailer want to get rid of it? Because, well,
it's
if
not
they didn't
something...
sell it, it's not gonna. It's probably not going to be a back issue perennial.
I was going to say, it's not going to have the back issue demand. It's a new character that nobody cares about now. Why are they going to care about it later for the most part? It's harsh
and maybe
to say
the
that.
Thinking, maybe the thinking there is, you know, at least I can get somebody to pick up the last issue for a buck. They might pick up the current issue that I've got on the stand, you know?
Yeah. I think some of it's a cutting the losses and moving on, you know, which I cannot fault a retailer for. You know, you go two slots above that at rank 96, you've got Arkham Reborn number 2, and this is issue 2 of a 3-issue miniseries. And it lost 30.9% of the first issue sales. That first issue did 31,493 units. Lost 9,730 units, taking it down to 21,763 units. So it lost a third of the sales between the first and the second issue of a 3-issue miniseries. That's a bad sign. And I don't understand that, because I would think people would kind of know what they're getting into. With a longer miniseries, I can say, well, I'll try the first issue, and if I like it, I'll wait for the trade. You bought a third of it. Why would you wait for the trade? And you got the same thing with X-Men versus Agents of Atlas at rank 81, where it lost nearly 23% between the first and the second issue, taking the second issue down to 25,214 units.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got the first half of the story, are you really thinking people aren't going to like it enough to finish it off?
Well, what that might actually, you know, if you think of it, it might actually be the case that it's those first issues, they ordered them, and they've got a bunch of them still sitting on their rack. You know, that's the thing. If I'm a retailer and there's a 3-issue miniseries of which I order the first couple of issues sight unseen, and when it actually comes out, I've still got, you know, 10, 20 copies of issue 1 sitting on the stand, I'm certainly going to cut my orders for issue number 3.
Well, let's take that X-Men Agents of Atlas. I mean, that first issue came out on October 7th. Second issue came out on November 4th. So they have to sell it that first week, get feedback from those retailers saying, oh, gee, I didn't like it or whatever, or not sell it. But basically, they've got a week, maybe two, about a week before that final order cutoff comes into play to where they can, you know, get their order down or whatever. And I think part of this comes down to it's a very tight market. People are not taking chances on stuff.
Well, I think, you know, that's applicable because, you know, the retailer that takes the wrong chance, you know, they go out of business.
Yeah, and I completely support retailers being conservative on their stuff. I'd rather they be conservative and stick around than take, you know, risky chances and go out of business. That's just not good for anyone. Now, at rank 69, we got the second issue of Haunt. First issue did 50,036 units. It dropped by 21,791 units, or about 43.55%, taking it down to 28,245 units. And that's a pretty noticeable drop right there. And that's beyond a first and second issue drop combined. So it'll be interesting to see if it stabilizes, if it picks up steam. Because, again, the first couple issues are ordered sight unseen. It's usually not until you get that third to fourth issue shift that if that starts to go up, that's a good sign because it's kind of a course correction. And it actually, you know, the item would have found an audience or something by then. What else do we got that looks interesting? Go ahead and jump towards the bottom of the list. There's always some fun stuff there. Actually, the bottommost item on the list, rank 300, is Underground number 3. We talked about the first issue of that.
And that's a really nice series, but I can see it being in that because it's just not the kind of story. While I really enjoyed it, it's not. It's more of that drama, but not like guys whooping on each other or, you know, high action. It was more like suspenseful.
It's but, not a, you know, a standard comic book sort of story.
Right. That's one I would imagine that, you know, like a Vertigo book, you know, that could find an audience in trade paperback of people looking for a more substantive story.
Yeah. It sold 2,698 units, and I've read through issue 4, because 5 has not come out yet. And I'm really enjoying that series, but it does remind me of almost like a movie of the week, kind of a, you know, cable TV movie sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. And a good one. And I don't mean that bad, but it's got that sort of, you know, storyline or whatever, and again, is not the sort of story you typically find in a comic book.
Yeah. You got Red Herring up there, ranked 285. I mean, that's pretty low for a Vertigo Wildstorm type of title.
Yeah, 3,437 units, and that's at the point where they've obviously decided to ride it out for the six.
It's a six-issue series, right? You know, I appreciate it when a publisher will not leave me hanging in the middle of a series, you know.
I appreciate that too, but I guess I would appreciate it more if they had not left me hanging on Family Dynamic from Johnny DC, which they cut off at 3 issues out of the 6. You know. But
and you know what, I think the logic probably going on there, again, you know, pure speculation on my part, but I'm guessing that they think that a Red Herring is going to have a more substantial life in trade on the bookshelf with the other, you know, mystery type books like that than Family Dynamic would. And I would guess that they're probably correct on that assumption.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've already commissioned the work and stuff, you may as well put it out there and recoup your losses. You know, and even at this low sales, I would imagine they're making a few pennies, if not, you know, at least breaking even. And even if they lose a little money, it's at least better than losing whatever you sunk into putting the stuff together to begin with.
Right.
And like you said, once it goes to trade, that's another revenue stream for it right there. Now, I'm more surprised by stuff like Stormwatch PhD number 24, which is at rank 264 with its 4,596 units. And that dropped another nearly 5% from the previous issue. Because they still are going. I think they've announced a new direction or a new part of the arc or whatever for the Wildstorm universe, and they haven't cut the cord on this yet.
When are they finally just gonna give up on that core Wildstorm universe? It does not sell, and I in substantial numbers. I can't imagine that even the trades on it are gonna do that good. You know, compared to like. You know, for instance, I think, you know, even something like Red Herring or what was that that Wildstorm series we liked with the, you know, the guys, the
Highwaymen.
You know, like those things. I mean, I think that people who don't like traditional comics, someone can hand them that as a trade and they can enjoy the story. Even Red Herring. I mean, that's a book that someone who doesn't like superheroes whooping on each other, you can give them that and they can enjoy that. You know, there's a nice storyline going on there and some little twists and, you know, subtext and all this kind of stuff. But the Wildstorm stuff, you know, Stormwatch and Authority and all that, if you don't like regular superhero comics, I can't imagine you're going to like that much either. You know,
it's funny you say that, because on the one hand, I see where you're coming from and I kind of agree with you. But then I look at rank 87 with The Boys 36. And let me filter this down to Dynamite for just a second. This is the top-selling Dynamite title. Add in Boys Herogasm, number 6, which is at rank 100, and it's the top two top-selling Dynamite books by a wide margin. Boys 36 sold 23,463 units. And while that's down almost 5.5% from the previous issue, it's usually the top book for Dynamite. And this is a complete slamming of the superhero genre on a routine basis.
Right, but I think that's what makes it sell, because it's a lampooning of superheroes, and people who enjoy superheroes will enjoy that. Someone who maybe doesn't like superheroes will like seeing superheroes get lambasted a little bit. Whereas you take a Stormwatch, it's, you know,
it's standard superheroes. Just
it's standard superheroes.
Okay.
Just
okay, I'll buy that.
You don't care about, you know.
Yeah.
Just.
I would say if they're going to do anything with the Wildstorm universe, they need to end the ongoing titles, do a clean end on that. Maybe do some miniseries, but they need to get some good talent on it. They need to have a good direction, and it needs to be something where people are anxiously awaiting that next miniseries. And it's not just marking time, because I think that's kind of what's killing the Wildstorm universe now. You know, they've bled the interest out of it. What else do we have here?
I noticed that Hercules is down pretty low, and again, that's another one that's just kind of a pity, you know, because that's a really nice book. The art's beautiful in that book, and it's, you know, nice adventure book. Beautiful looking, good story, nice little plot twists each issue, and there it is.
To me, that's, you know, on the trade side is where we're going to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Now, another one at rank 238, that's, we've got a couple of things that have ended, or have been announced to end. We've got one issue left of the Mighty, but this is number 10. It did 5,726 units, down about 3.4%. Now, this is a title that back when it started did only 17,955 units. So it was pretty much from the get-go clear it wasn't going to stick around all that long. They're at least seeming to finish off the storyline, hopefully with that final 12th issue. And then we've got the final 12th issue of Vigilante at rank 227. It did 6,448 units. That one had started at, what did that one start at? 18,233 units. So another one that from the word go was pretty clear it wasn't going to stick around. Key difference between the two, Mighty is in its own universe. Vigilante is one of the lowest selling mainstream DC Universe titles I think I've seen in a while, or ever. So even being under the DC logo in the DC Universe proper is no guarantee of sales these days. Now, one of the ones that I'm a little, frankly, worried about is at rank 201. I just read the latest issue or two of The Web, which is part of the Red Circle stuff, although set in the main DC universe. And the more I read of this title, the more I like it. Third issue here did 7,628 units. We'll go that way. And that's down 18.96% from the previous issue. So it's well under 8,000 units. And that's not a sign of long-term survival for a mainstream DC book. But I'd like to see this one stick around, because it's a fairly unique take on superheroes, I think. Have you been reading this one beyond the first issue?
Vigilante, no.
Web.
Oh, Web. No, I read the first issue, and I liked it okay. I liked it better than I liked the Shield, but I kind of took the red circle-ish ones kind of in total and said, okay, I'm not going to get the Shield. I'm not going to get the web either. That was my thinking. And, you know, will I pick them up eventually? Maybe. I mean, I've heard good things about it, but just haven't been picking it up.
I think the web's the better of the two, but the Shield's selling nearly 1,000 units better. So, apparently what I think and what the market thinks don't quite match here. Another one that I question how much longer it's going to be going is one that I think both of us really enjoy and would hate to see go away, and that's at rank 177. That's Warlord.
I was shocked to find it still being solicited when I looked at the DC solicits, you know, on the web this month. So it's still hanging in there. I thought for sure that they were going to put a fork in that one, but issue 12 is solicited, and they're not saying it's the last issue. And I was kind of expecting when 12 got solicited that it would have a last issue thing on it.
Yeah. Now,
until they solicit 13,
yes.
But you know, the solicit for 12 is not saying it's the last one. I think it's good, and Mike Grell is still doing the art, which I think, you know, as long as Mike can do that, is a really great idea on their part. I've always liked Mike Grell, so you know, I'm not sure if that's not picking up because, you know, a lot of people don't know who Mike Grell is. They don't maybe appreciate or they don't have that history with him.
Well, it's funny because there's always this talk about the aging of the comic audience and stuff. And here's a case where DC took a popular, you know, well-thought-of title that ran for, 130 issues or some such?
Yeah.
Back in the day. And, you know, they've brought it back. They're doing a faithful continuation of it by Mike Grell, the creator and longtime artist and writer on the book. And here we are at the eighth issue. It's selling 9,544 units. So, you know, they kind of did everything right in terms of keeping it intact creatively and artistically and so forth. It's something that I would think audience aware of the original series would be clamoring for, you know, a continuation of it and stuff. I'm certainly enjoying it, but, you know, under 10,000 units by a wide margin. You know, and again, this is another one that started at 17,537 units. So, you know, going back to the well doesn't seem to be working in some cases either.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you do a faithful version of that. So, It's just a rough market out there. And, you know, when I see minimal gains on most titles, if at all, I mean, minimal number of titles with gains, I should say, and then some books that have losses that are just staggering, I really kind of worry. Because you've got to be pretty high on the list to be selling a decent number of comics. Because really, once you get below 20,000, if you're in Marvel and DC, that's kind of, you know, questionable status as to if that title's going to stick around. So that means anything not in the top 100, you know, if it's a mainstream Marvel DC book, you know, it's fair game to wonder if it's going to stick around or not.
Yeah. DC does seem to ride them a lot lower than Marvel does.
I think they're doing it because I don't want to say because they have no choice, but I think if they had a viable option, they'd be taking it. Because when I first started doing, you know, these podcast segments and stuff on this, if something was below 20,000, it was pretty much toast and pretty quick. And now we've got stuff going below 10,000 and sometimes way below 10,000 and not going away. Well, like Great 10, it's at rank 143, we've got the first issue there during 13,155 units. And 10 issues starting at that, it's going to be quite possibly under 5,000 units by the time it's done. Now, maybe it'll catch on, maybe it'll go up, who knows, but given the evidence at hand, I would sure be reluctant if I were at DC choosing to greenlight titles or whatever, to greenlight something that has a finite, you know, 10-issue run, just because that seems aggressive. And that worries me, because that shouldn't be, you know, that aggressive. So, take a quick look at the cover prices. We had 135 issues that were $2.99, so that's 45% of the list. 38.33% of the list, or 115 items, were at the $3.99. We had 23 items at $3.50, so that's 7.67% of the list. That right there accounts for 91% of the items on the list. So, $2.99, $3.99, and $3.50 being the most popular prices. We had 212 items sell less than the previous issue, 21 items sell more than the previous issue, and out of those 21, keep in mind, 7 of those were the Power Ring issues. So, you know, this was actually, in terms of issue-to-issue gains and losses, a really good month, because the net was only a loss of 140,146 units. Typically, it's way more than that. But we had a couple of huge gains this time, and, you know, where the average loss on a title would be 1,954 units, the average gain was 13,051 units. And so that kind of almost balanced out. So you got anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that pretty much covers it. It's an interesting month. I'm going to be, you know, the next event for me that'll be interesting is once Blackest Night's over, you know, the crossovers are over, seeing the sales continuity on some of those issues that got the bump.
Yeah.
Are they going to go all the way back down? Or, you know, halfway, is it going to sustain? And it's going to be like not just that very next issue, but, you know, what the trend line looks a couple of issues in.
My expectation at the moment for those couple of titles, again, Rebels, Outsiders, etc., is that what we're going to see next month is a noticeable drop in sales. And by noticeable, I mean it for like that Rebels, it's going to look like it plummets. But if you compare that next issue with the one prior to the Power Ring one, we'll probably see maybe a 5% increase, maybe 10, a little more, because, again, it's still a Blackest Night crossover. Now, we could see a lot more than that. It's a little hard to tell how much of this bump is because of the Power Rings and the sales thresholds retailers had to get, whatever. But I would expect once that Blackest Night is over, we're either going to be on par with the previous issue or within a few percent. But certainly by that next issue after that, so the second non-Blackest Night event, we'll be pretty much where the trend line would put it. That just seems to be how it goes, and I really hope I'm wrong on that, because I would like to see some of these titles, you know, have some readers stick around. It'd be a darn shame if that doesn't happen. And if it does not happen, I think that it's a strong case for, you know, these crossover events being a sales gimmick that literally works only for that issue and that issue alone that it crosses over to. And that there being no carryover for the most part. And I think we're already at a point where we're close to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in the day, it used to be you'd have the crossover. You would get a bump for a good couple of issues until those kind of people, you know, wrote it out. It would almost be like that bump would go through the attrition rate of a new title, if you will. But now it's just here today, gone tomorrow. But we should definitely keep an eye on those titles over the next couple of months and see how that rides out. I think that pretty much does it then.
Yep.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully done in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.